Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It happens every day at 4 o'clock here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. We bring in John Clayton for a conversation. If you guys have questions for the professor, you can text those in right now to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, and we'll try to get to your questions before we let John go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
How are you?
Hanging in there.
So what was your take, before we get into specifics, just, you know, Seahawks win. They beat an Eagles team that's, you know, decimated with injuries. They're struggling. So some people looked at that and said, man, that was too close. That was ugly. It's a bottom line business. They won. What was your takeaway from the game?
No, I thought it was impressive because, again, you can see they're fixing things on defense and there's still a work in progress. But look at the progress. Now, again, you worry a little bit about how bad that foot injury is going to be for Carlos Dunlap, because look at the change that he's made on the defensive line. Change in the sense that, you know, what, 19 sacks in four games. They're up to 29 right now. They had six sacks. Doug Peterson said today that it could have been as many as 10. They had 12 hits on the quarterback. And so all of a sudden, putting Dunlap on the outside as a starter at the Leo position has opened things up for the defensive tackles to get pressure on the quarterback. You can see that getting Rasheem Green in there as one of the nickel pass rushers inside, that's working out. He's able to get pressure. And so you hope that Dunlap's not going to miss much time, because that's on a roll right now, and you want it to keep getting better and better and better. You can see that the secondary had a real good game. Shaquille Griffin, I thought, was sensational. His man coverage was really good. He was tight on all the receivers. He knocked some balls down. That was impressive. And Jamal Adams is just a freak. I mean, the guy has six and a half sacks in seven games. I don't think I've ever seen a safety like that. You know, we've seen, you know, Brian Dawkins and we've seen Troy Polamalu, but not a guy that can get that many sacks. I mean, I don't think there's been a safety in this game that could even think about getting possible double-digit sacks, and this is after missing four games.
Well, and then the other thing with him, John, I think he gets to plays that other guys just wouldn't. So sometimes if you see him, oh, he missed a tackle or whatever, it's like other players wouldn't even be there. And there's some criticism, I know we're going to get to this later on, where he maybe gets a little bit fired up about it, but you know, I guess I don't really understand the criticism. I know that there's a couple of times, and last night he had a moment where, you know, coverage wasn't great. I can't remember if he like just kind of dropped off of him or just didn't, you know, cut right with the break, but I'm hearing all of this noise about how he can't cover. He can cover. I mean, the guy can run. He can, you know, he's agile. I don't know. I wonder if people are looking at something that, you know, a lot of times you see zone and they think it's man or vice versa. So I don't know. It just, to me, that part, that criticism is kind of strange considering everything that he brings to the table.
Exactly. I know that he got into it with Joe Fan after the game because Joe Fan was asking about the pass coverage, and you know, he was kind of badgering Joe as far as, you know, hey, so you don't think I can cover well, huh? And they were getting back into it, and he said, no, I think you're doing pretty well with the coverage. And he said, well, I thank you for that. And so it's like, it was kind of funny to see that kind of reaction, because I mean, he is fired up. And I think what's so amazing is, you know, and this is a tribute to John Snyder, is that John Snyder has made now three moves in the last 2 years. That's minimizing some of the great things that he's done. But think about the personalities and guys that he's been able to bring to the team. I mean, he makes a trade up for DK Metcalf, and DK Metcalf is getting more fiery each week. I mean, to a point where he wanted to prove Jim Schwartz wrong for saying he wasn't Megatron Calvin Johnson. He wanted to prove the Eagles wrong for taking Agrega Whiteside over him, because Agrega Whiteside was the eighth pick in the 8th wide receiver taken in the 2019 draft. That's one ahead of Metcalf, and so we wanted to prove him wrong. And what's Whiteside done? He's had 12 catches in 2 years, and he had 10 all of last year. And he had 160-some yards, which is less than what Metcalf had in the game against the Eagles. And so, I mean, how crazy is that? And, of course, you know, he brings a fire. Carlos Dunlap brings a fire. And so, you know, not only they're adding talent. And, you know, for all those who have criticized Snyder for saying, okay, well, you didn't go out and get any pass rushers. Look at the numbers right now with Jamal Adams, with, you know, Benson Mayoa, now that he's healthy, and also now with what they were able to get from Carlos Dunlap. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, you got to say, Arcega-Whiteside's one of those soft Stanford guys, John. So, you know, You can't compare him to Metcalf. But what do you think it is, John, that he says to players to make them so angry? We were just talking about that earlier. Like, he has gotten Stephon Gilmore, Dre Kirkpatrick, and now Darius Slay as angry as I've ever seen a player out on the field. It's pretty remarkable how he's a nice, humble kid.
Yeah.
And yet, man, he's got a side to him. I love that part.
Well, and I think it has to go back to his father, because his father was an offensive lineman, and he brings a little bit of that offensive line mentality where he doesn't want to just beat you mentally and physically. He wants to really kind of pound you. Because, I mean, you saw, particularly in this, what was it, the second quarter, that, I mean, they were really getting physical, Slay, and to a point where Slay ends up taking an 11-yard penalty for unsportsmanlike conduct because, you know, Metcalf was so physical with him. It's like, hey, you're going to be physical with me. I'm bigger than you, so I'm going to get physical with you. Now, that sometimes is going to lead to mistakes and some penalties and things of that nature. But right now, you look at the fact, and, you know, in the Pro Bowl voting, I think he's in the top four by the fans, rightfully so. He now leads the league in yardage. I mean, he's almost, in fact, this next game should put him over 2,000 yards as far as his receiving yards in the first 2 years of his career. And really what you're looking at, I mean, I know that it wasn't smart of Jim Schwartz to bring up the Megatron statement before the game, but basically what you're seeing in Metcalf is Calvin Johnson, Megatron, only they're able to get him at the 64th pick.
Amazing. Is he, and you just hit on the stat, that he is right now the league leader in terms of wide receivers for receiving yards at 1,039. Tyreek Hill is just behind him at 1,021. Would you say he's the best receiver? Is he top five? Where do you rank him right now?
I'd say right now you have to put him somewhere in the top five because, I mean, you still can't take away Julio Jones, who's been injured most of the season. I mean, you can see that Stephon Gilmore has been great, you know, with the Buffalo Bills.
Diggs.
Diggs, I'm sorry. Yeah, Diggs, you know. But so it's like that one, you know, he's done well. You know, Michael Thomas is still one of the best, but he's been hurt most of the year, so you kind of scratch him for the moment. But he's got to be somewhere in the top four.
Yeah. Hey, John, how are you going to view these games coming up here? You know, you talked about how, it was pretty they took care of Philadelphia. But, you know, you got the Giants. You got the football team coming in here. You got the Jets. I mean, I just always assume that every team is going to have – like, you look at the front seven that the Philly had, really good, really good, well-coached, everything. You're going to run up against that. But, I mean – how are you going to view it if they beat the Jets 21-20? This is kind of the question I've been asking. How are you going to feel about this team? It just seems like until they get to the Ram game, you know, nobody. And it's not a team that goes out and blows people out. Bob was pointing that out earlier. And, you know, like I was looking at the Saints, and they've had a bunch of close games. But, you know, they've had at least two or three, maybe four even blowouts. The Seahawks just haven't been that kind of team.
Yeah, because again, what happens is in the blowout type of games, which could have been the case last night, you know, they let the other teams come back to a certain degree, you know, with either. And again, I still think this is a byproduct. And I'd love to see how you would go through this season, you know, because what I'm seeing is defenses basically wearing out. And what I mean by wearing out is that once they get to the fourth quarter, most of the defensive players, if they played over 45, 50 plays, they're starting to get gassed. And so all of a sudden, you can make the 35 comebacks from double-digit leads. You can have the 45 games where you've had fourth-quarter comebacks. You're more vulnerable, but of course, if you have a 10, 17-point lead and they come back and make it a one-possession game, you still have enough of a cushion like they did last night to be able to win and win convincingly. So, I think you throw the stats out, but here's the one thing that you've got to watch this week. Now, we know that it's pretty doubtful that Daniel Jones is going to play because of the hamstring injury, so that means they're going to go with Colt McCoy. They're suspect on the offensive line, so that could lead to some sacks and all those different things, and probably a lower-scoring game by the Giants. But what and of course, the Jets are hopeless right now because they can't even win a game. We'll see where it's going to be against the Washington football team. But what you're going to see is next week, there's a decent chance that the Seahawks climb out of number 32 for yardage allowed. They've narrowed the gap under 10 where they are because they're now in the low 400s where you still have, like, Houston a little over 400, Jacksonville a little over 400. And if they just have, you know, a 250-yard game, then all of a sudden they're now going to be 31st or 30th, which when this season was going on and they were giving up the 261 yards a game through the air, you thought would never happen.
If you guys have questions for the professor, text them into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll get to those here in just a few moments. John, where are you at with Carson Wentz? He's having a just a brutal season. Quarterback rating of 73. He leads the league in interceptions. How much do you put on him? How much do you put on what they talked a lot about last night, all the different faces on that offensive line, no weapons? And financially, Dave was talking about it earlier, how much guaranteed money is committed to him and how impactful it would be to their salary cap moving forward if they got rid of him. So what do you think of where he's at, and is he going to be there? Is he going to continue to be their guy?
What's happened with him, it started with that first game. I remember they had Brandon Brooks go on the injured reserve list with an Achilles tear. Then Andre Dillard got wiped out for the season. And so now you're down 40% of your offensive line. And say what you want, and Lane Johnson's a great right tackle, but he wasn't the same this year because of an ankle injury, and now his season is over. So now that turned over. One of their guards had to go on injured reserve. And so you start the season out against Washington, and Carson Wentz was good enough to get a big lead. Then all of a sudden, he gets sacked eight times in that game, and what ended up happening is he hasn't been the same since. He's got happy feet. You can see his decision making's gone. I mean, he's been sacked 46 times this year, which leads the league. I mean, he is making wrong decisions. I mean, he's just lost. And right now, Doug Peterson's at the point where he may change the play calling and giving over to Deuce Staley because things are so stale and he can't get Carson Wentz out of this funk. And right now, you can see that Doug Peterson is kind of in his own funk right now because he can't figure a way to get Jalen Wentz to come in to replace him. I mean, he put him in for, two plays or something like that in the game last night. So it's a lost cause, and now it's to the point it's so severe that something's going to give. They probably can't get rid of Carson Wentz unless they can trade him and just kind of give him away in a trade, kind of like a Brock Osweiler type of thing. Or Doug Peterson could lose his job. Even today, Doug addressed the idea. It's like, are you worried about your job? He goes, I haven't been reassured of anything. And so now a lot of people in Philly start to think that he could get fired after the season. And then if not, Howie Roseman, the general manager, can get fired for doing such a bad job of making it to one of the oldest teams in the league, being $70-some million over the cap, and also having nothing at the wide receiver position.
All right, John, taking a look around the NFL, give us kind of a recap of what happened in Denver. As far as, the COVID thing that's going on, and then 112 yards. I guess quarterbacks really do matter, John.
Yeah.
112 yards of offense, 3 points. The Saints just absolutely blow Denver out. And there was some talk of a little bit of tension between Elway and Goodell. What's going on?
Well, I mean, if there is, it's like, hey, too bad Denver, because, I mean, they made a mistake. Now, the 4-man meeting for quarterbacks was allowed. They had that approved. But if you're not wearing your mask, you can carry something over. And now none of the 4 quarterbacks tested positive. This was all they were in a high-risk situation, and then, from some of the players that they were around, and then they're all together, and so, they should have been scratched because, they put themselves and put the team in a bad spot. I think the league came out today and said in similar situations, in a high-risk tracing, which is, of course, that's 5 days, in a high-risk situation like that, there's been 20 instances where the guys that tested negative eventually end up testing positive. And so because of that, they shouldn't have, if they were in the meeting, they shouldn't have had the meeting, or they should have done it in a way where they had the masks. I put that more on Denver than anything else. So I think the league did right on that, because what you don't want to see is what happened in Baltimore, with a strength coach that ended up starting to not wear his mask and spread it among 23 players on the team and numerous people in the front office, where you don't want to see a situation that Kyle Shanahan addressed today, where Kyle said that he was asking him, it's like, hey, now is this going to be a bonding thing for your team to move to Phoenix for a month? He goes, no, there's no reason for the bonding thing. He says, think about what happened after the New Orleans game. We had a bunch of players get together and have a dinner for 30 minutes sometime after the game, and 9 players ended up going on the COVID list.
Mm. John, I did see a note here that Mora put down. The Broncos reportedly asked the NFL for permission to have one of their offensive coaches who had played quarterback play, but they were denied.
Mm-hmm.
So, they asked for that, yeah. The great Rob Calabrese.
Yeah.
How old is he?
I don't know anything about him, man. I just read his name.
Right. Let's put it this way. We probably know more about him. We did Kendall Hinton and his one completion for 13 yards, although he was a Wake Forest quarterback for 2.5 years. But, no, it's like they did ask for it, and you know that there's no way they can allow that to happen, because what happens if they do that? You know, next year what Bill Belichick does is that he's going to take some ex-quarterback and make him an assistant coach, pay him like about $100,000 a year, and if he needs to put him on the field, he'll put him on the field. If they can't allow that to happen. I mean, you can't make the move from coach to player. You're not in the Players Association anymore. I mean, you could be a former member, but you're not a current member. And so, no, that just you can ask, but it should have been denied.
So he played in 2012 at Central Florida, it looks like. And that's the last bit of football that he's played and just been like an offensive quality control guy.
Wow. That's desperate times, though. Can our coach play?
Yeah.
He's thrown a ball once or twice in the last, I don't know, 8 years or whatever it is.
Played in 8 years. I mean,
unbelievable. Oh, hey, quickly, one other game that's, I mean, they've been trying to make it happen. It looks like it'll happen tomorrow, John, the Steelers and the Ravens. It's going to happen at 12:40 our time. I don't know what the Ravens roster is going to look like. RG3 throwing the ball, Dez Bryant out there catching passes. This isn't the matchup we were all looking forward to
in terms of
the players.
No, although, I mean, they were scheduled to board their plane 4 minutes ago to go from Baltimore to Pittsburgh, and there was no positive test today. So the game's going to be on, and they took 4 more players off the COVID list, but they've still got 16, including some practice squad players, that are on the list. And here's the weird thing. We saw this with Matthew Stafford, but the two running backs, Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins, are going to be allowed to play, but because the timing of them coming off the list, they're not allowed to be on the flight. So what has to happen is they have to fly in separately. So I don't know if they're going to have to send a charter for the two players, or they're going to have to, you know, go commercial, or what they're going to do. So the two running backs won't get in until tomorrow because they weren't going to be allowed to be on the flight today. So that's kind of a weird one. But, no, I think they're in deep trouble. No Lamar Jackson. They did get Brandon Williams back, but I don't know if he's healthy enough to be able to play. He's still been fighting an injury, and they've had no practice in almost 2 weeks.
Yeah, John, rest of the league, look around. Giants over Bengals, nothing great there. How about the Tennessee Titans, man? That A.J. Brown kid, that guy is such a beast. I love watching him play. He was the one, he's the receiver, big guy. Saw him against the Ravens break like 7 tackles on 2 different plays. He had he picked up the onside kick and scored. He had another score. I mean, I like what Mike Vrabel has going with his team right now. And you got Derrick Henry. I mean, they're playing good football right now. It's at 8-3.
Yeah, and of course, what they did is they caught Indianapolis at the right time. I think we now see the value of DeForest Buckner. You saw it with the change in the 49ers. And, you know, literally, when he's on the field, they average like about, defenses average maybe about 3.5 yards a gain on the ground. And of course, when he's off the field, they average over 5. That's how good he is. And then, they didn't have their starting running back, Jonathan Taylor. He tested positive. The left tackle and Anthony Costanzo, he hurts his knee, and he's going to be out a couple weeks, MCL injury. Their starting center, Ryan Kelly, was out, so the offensive line wasn't the same. Quentin Nelson in the last couple weeks hasn't been the dominating Quentin Nelson, so the ground game wasn't there. You know, they got Phillip Rivers struggled, and then they had a linebacker that was out. They just had too many hits that took away too many key players. You know, you take away a left tackle, a Pro Bowl defensive tackle, a decent run-stopping linebacker with a great athletic ability. They're down 2 running backs because they're starting running back Marlon Mack's out for the season. So they were just vulnerable to lose, and they lost.
Mm. Hey, John, quickly, how surprised are you with the Cleveland Browns at 8-3? And you look at Baker Mayfield's stats, I mean, he's doing all right. He's completing 61% of his passes, but only 2,100 yards, 17 touchdowns, 7 picks. It's all about their run game, right? Two running backs that are over 700 yards apiece.
It's Kevin Stefanski. Because when you think about this, you know, there are 5 new coaches in this league this year. I'm not talking about the interim coaches or anything of that nature. But, 4 of those 5, 3 are in the NFC East, have four wins or less. You know, you got Joe Judge with four wins. You've got Ron Rivera with four wins. Mike McCarthy with three wins, and Matt Rhule with four wins. But here's Stefanski changing. They're now the number one rushing team in football for over 160 yards a game. You know, they've got two great running backs. They've taken the pressure off of Mayfield, because Mayfield at times, particularly in the red zone, making some bad throws, looked like Carson Wentz. Making some bad throws, but they've made it easier for him, and by making it easier for him with a good defense and a great running game, they've now won eight.
Hey, John, what do you think about the call? I'm drawing a blank on his name, but the linebacker, rookie linebacker Isaiah Simmons, the hit on Cam Newton. What do you think about that? That allowed them to extend a drive and then end up kicking a field goal to beat the Cardinals.
Yeah, I didn't think it was too much of a penalty. I thought that it's one that
Inbounds.
It was inbounds. Yeah, because it was inbounds and he's heading out of bounds, and so I think that it should have been a non-call in my opinion.
Mm. Yeah, I thought so too, and I just think it's incredibly difficult to, and you know, if you're a linebacker and you're coming up there and you see Cam Newton still,
yeah,
he'll put his shoulder down and run some linebackers over now, and all of a sudden if you let up, I mean, he gets extra yards. I just think it's incredibly hard for these guys.
Let's put it this way: it's one of the few times in Cam Newton's career he actually had a call go for him, because normally he doesn't get the call as a running quarterback and he takes the big hits. So that's one of the rare ones that you can see. But overall, I think that to show you that Cam was a little bit stunned on that one too. Did you see what he did after the game, as the game was ending and they were kicking a game-winning field goal? Uh-oh. He went over to Joshy Boy McDaniels and says, "I'm sorry. I'm sorry for my play."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then after the game said, "I'm not apologizing for my play. I'm here to win." So there you go. John, good stuff. We'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com.